on our doorstep. I believe in the change I see and haven't seen yet. Oh.
October 15th, Global Exchange celebrates 25 years of activism with a concert at El Rio. That's 3158 Mission Street near Presidio. This Raptivism concert features Aisha Fukushima with DJ Jamie Jams spinning records in between sets. Joining me now in studio is the fabulous Aisha Fukushima. Aisha is a singer, public speaker, educator, writer, and self-proclaimed rap activist. As leader of the Raptivism Project, Aisha raises social awareness through connections between global hip-hop and social justice. In 2012, she released her global Raptivism album featuring more than 20 leading political hip-hop acts from around the world. Her Raptivism work has been featured by Oprah Magazine. She has founded a number of educational programs, including Turn Off the Stereotypes and Sistars, an all-girls hip-hop club. Aisha recently returned from two international performance lecture tours in Japan and Kazakhstan. She's fluent in French and building proficiency in Japanese, Arabic, and Wolof. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but I do know that it's the predominant language in Senegal. And we're also joined by Kirsten Moeller, co-founder and organizing director of Global Exchange. Thanks, both of you wonderful women, for coming in and talking to us on Women's Magazine.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you. Konbanwa. Genki desu ka? Nanga def? Salamu alaikum. Bonjour. Vaskeraman. It's such a pleasure to be here.
Aisha, we'll start with you. Your bio says that you come from a musical family. Tell us about that and how you got into raptivism.
So my family is not so much musical, but they were involved in the music industry, which is a little bit different. I grew up with two parents who, throughout a lot of my early childhood, were booking agents, booking different American artists in particular around the world. That could be James Brown or TLC or Criss Cross to Ice Cube and Snoop Dogg, folks who wouldn't necessarily be categorized as rap activists or raptivists, but just an array of music, Funkadelic, Bootsy Collins. So I grew up behind the scenes of the music industry and artists like the ones I mentioned, and that at an early age gave me an idea and kind of a very tangible understanding of the power of music to move people even across borders and across cultures and nationalities and faiths. I think from those early experiences, I was definitely inspired to carry on a legacy through music.
And talk about Raptivism, and this is something that you founded, a project, the Raptivism Project. What is that, and why did you decide that this was something that you needed to create?
Wow, it starts from actually a very early age. I mean, I started singing and getting into performing arts when I was around 6 or 7, more formally actually doing musicals and getting involved with my community. But I think it was really when I hit middle school and high school. I lived in a town or city called Bellevue, right outside of Seattle, Washington. And there was a lot of ignorance, and it was considered cool in my local community and among a lot of my colleagues and my peers in school. So dropping really racist jokes or making sexist comments, that all became part of the tapestry of my everyday. And I think I noticed that a lot of the teachers were not well equipped with knowing how to address those things on the spot, or not maybe feeling uncomfortable talking about those things. Administrators the same way. And then a lot of the teens and my colleagues in my peer group felt uncomfortable speaking up to that stuff too, because we all wanted to be cool, like the peer pressure, right? So I think I realized at an early age, one way I couldn't just sit there and let that type of bullying and discrimination just happen every day. And whether that was directed at me or someone else, I just couldn't sit idly and let that happen without speaking my mind or trying to make a difference. And I realized really quickly that a lot of people would get very abrasive and very, you get kind of into that vitriolic ad hoc debate type mode when you just confronted them straight on. But I started to write my own poetry and to write my own songs and to express myself and my opinions and to try to challenge the way people think and some of their comfort zones through arts and culture. And that opened up a whole new venue of conversation and a whole new ability to have an influence in changing the culture of my school. And so from there, I started the Turn Off the Stereotypes project when I was a high school senior. Actually, that was one of my first endeavors in learning how to link my passion for music as a singer, as a vocalist, as an MC, a poet, with my passion for making change in my local community. And so after starting that project, I ran and trying to figure out how I could get funding. I met with local artist activists, everything from capoeira to drumming to acting teachers. And we talked about everything from sexuality to gender politics to religion and different faith backgrounds and race and so on and so forth, class. And we met up with folks like the ACLU or the Maven Foundation, who does a lot of multiracial activism around intersectionalities of identities, and joined those artists with the human rights organizations in order to have deeper dialogues and workshops where we could learn an art form that broke down some of that mask and let us be a little bit vulnerable in that learning process so we could open up to a more enriching conversation as a community. It was particularly geared towards youth, but I was really happy to see some of my teachers and some of the various generations from my community also join that cipher, so to speak. From there, I went to college and I felt some of the same kinds of social pressures and some of those tensions arising and continuing to use.
That was in Washington State.
In Washington State.
At Whitman College.
That's right, in Whitman College, which was a fantastic. I loved going to Whitman, but at the same time, there were challenges that popped up. I mean, every year it seemed like there was some sort of challenge that popped up for our campus community to talk about and to address. And one of the tools that I really found was being able to do that through performing arts and also being able to humanize different situations. So it's not like it doesn't become this whole debate that just in some ways it can get personal, but also so impersonal that that hatred comes in. And that's really a scary place, right? And so I think through art and through storytelling, particularly hip hop is a form of storytelling, in my opinion, we're able to humanize each other and then have a more real dialogue than just yelling and talking at one another. And so I started a band called The Raptivists in college, and I had been studying French for over 10 years. Finally got a chance to study abroad in France and brought that passion for hip-hop and activism with me in my heart, and then met other hip-hop activists who are already doing that stuff and saying, hey, how is this? This is like the norm for y'all in your ciphers. Can I join? Like, can we make music together? And recorded my first track with a hip-hop MC out in Nantes, France, while I was taking classes at the university there. And from there, I said, well, why not make a global album like this? And so once I graduated from Whitman, I was awarded a Watson Fellowship, one of 40 people across the country, and traveled for over 13 months to six countries, seven including here in the United States, to record this global Raptivism album with hip-hop pioneers and political activists who really helped shape the movement, found it, and lead it around the world, from Africa to Europe to Asia and North America. And so that's a little bit of how Raptivism came about and came into fruition. And it's always evolving. The networks are always growing.
And there's a lot that's been said, probably maybe too much almost at this point, but about misogyny and sexism in hip hop. And of course, when I hear that, I mean, I always think, well, you know, what music genre doesn't have its misogyny and sexism, you know, an overgrowth of sexism and misogyny. But, you know, I am curious, as a young woman of color, did you feel like sexism was a problem for you, or did you find the environment maybe more welcoming than you expected?
Wow. I mean, sexism is everywhere. <You know? laughs> And like Pac said, I was born in this world. I didn't make it, right? So it's kind of like it's part of the fabric of the way our society has been conditioned and created. And I mean, the fact that a lot of our country's politics has also been founded on people as property, you know, I think that influences everything. It infiltrates everything. And it's something that we have room to work on and to change. Absolutely. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it affects everyone. And that can vary. Our experiences as women can vary based on the amount of melanin that people can see, and just based off your phenotype when they see you, or based on the intersectionality of the different components of our identity. I think this is something that we can all relate to on one level or another. And definitely it's had influence in the hip hop communities. But at the same time, I think what we don't see when we see a Lil Wayne on a magazine cover or a Jay-Z, quote unquote, running things, right, is that a lot of women are actually running things and making the wheels turn, whether that's in the hip hop industry or outside of that. So a lot of us are running things, so to speak. And I think that's a powerful thing to look at. I also recognize that some of the misogyny, and this is not to excuse it, might be based in an identity that has been cut down, that has been marginalized, to the point where they're finding oppressing another group of people is maybe a source of temporary feeling of empowerment, or very surface, this idea that somehow that's going to make you stronger, when in reality it brings us all down.
And I'm guessing, based on your name and your appearance, that you have a transracial identity of some sort. And I wondered if you would mind talking a little about your ethnic and cultural backgrounds and how those have influenced your music.
The what are you question? I'm not really a fan of this question. I'm actually a protester and a resistor of this question, because I'm asked so often. And I think I recently went to Japan on a tour, particularly for mixed race and mixed roots people. And so, like, definitely feeling solidarity with those movements where we're amplifying that voice. If you're asking me about my culture, I think my cultures have been really influenced, everything from the Egyptian folks who helped raise me to the Iranian culture that my mom has also incorporated into our own household, to the Chinese, and particularly the Mandarin aspects of Chinese that she's learned, and then also had influences from Taiwan, and growing up in a household that's very much intertwined with different traditions, as well as African-American traditions and Japanese traditions, having lived in Tokyo and then eventually living in places like Senegal and South Africa and Morocco and India and Denmark and in between, has definitely influenced my identity and who I am. And I think also my linguistic identity has definitely shaped and helped cultivate my mind and my spirit as a global citizen.
When we were driving over here, we were talking about Denmark, which is where I'm from, and she starts speaking Danish with a perfect accent. Oh. I think there's something about the musicality that just makes language come to you in a way that I don't see in a lot of people.
But, yeah, music, yeah. Math, and yeah. And language. Yeah. So Kirsten Moeller, you are one of the co-founders of Global Exchange. You founded this organization 25 years ago with Medea Benjamin and Kevin Danaher. Why did you all found Global Exchange?
Well, at the time, there were a lot of very strong solidarity movements around South Africa, around Nicaragua, El Salvador, and they were all kind of in their own silos doing really important and great work, but not connected at all. And the U.S. government had regional policies. So there was a regional policy around Central America, and we weren't making that connection in the solidarity movement in this country. So there were also a lot of people that they didn't feel welcome in those very deep and specific country organizations because they didn't have enough knowledge. So we wanted to be the big funnel that would allow people to come in, realize that internationalism was fun, that you could have an impact, that you had an obligation because our country's foreign policy was so detrimental around the world. And then that morphed to move beyond governments to looking at corporate power and the multilateral institutions that control the global economy. That kind of grew out later on. But in the beginning, we were three different collections of organizations under one. It was Central America Exchange, Caribbean Exchange, and Africa Exchange. And then decided that that wasn't a way to structure it that would actually work very much.
So when you look back on this 25 years of activism, what are some of the things that you're most proud of having accomplished at Global Exchange?
Oh, there's so many and so few.
Name a couple.
My son always asks me, so what have you actually accomplished? Where is the peace and justice in the world? I think that when I look at the 25 years that we've worked, the things that I am proud of are being able to step in quickly when things happen. After 9/11, a week after that happened, we were out there with Michael Franti saying, you know, we've got to think of this in terms of peace. We need to have hate-free communities and just stepping into the void really quickly whenever we could. I think that we played a big role with many other organizations at looking at how corporate power corrupts our democracy and how we have a role as citizens, as consumers, as activists, as parents to do something about that. That we have many roles as individuals that we can play and that different people will take different roles. So accepting a lot of different roles and encouraging people to take those roles to step up, I think, has been a really important role for Global Exchange. We've taken thousands of people to countries like Cuba, South Africa, Vietnam, Palestine, to see for themselves and make that heart connection with people in other countries that I think is fundamental for bringing about peace and justice in the world, is that actual true people-to-people connection and caring. We were talking in the car on the way over about what the exchange and Global Exchange means and how important it is to move beyond talking at people and to talking with people, and that so much of that exchange comes in the beginning was about, well, we can provide a little bit of material aid, but we have so much to learn from the South Africans about how they organized to overthrow the apartheid system. We have so much to learn about how the landless movement in Brazil can get hundreds of thousands of really poor people organized to take over land. I mean, there's so many things we in that exchange that we get that is beyond a charity model, which is the way people usually think of international work in the United States, is, oh, let's dig a well or let's do development work, which is fine. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But I think that if we want to build solidarity, it has to be in a partnership. And I think that Global Exchange, that's the thing that I'm most proud of, is that we kind of have worked in partnership in all the work that we did, in partnership with allies locally and in partnership with groups around the world.
And how would you like to see the work evolve or change over the next 25 years?
We've been talking a lot about that. I am now probably one of the oldest people at the organization, and I think there are so many new tools that need to be taken up and learned how to use. People can communicate cross borders much quicker now. there's just different ways of talking to each other, different ways of supporting each other. And I think being able to embrace those new tools, but still recognizing the core values of solidarity and the core values of democracy, really, is like, I was telling Aisha on the way over that we didn't know what we were doing when we started the organization. We actually had no clue how you applied for nonprofit status. So we filled out these forms in the backyard on my Selectric typewriter that was missing the letter L. And we decided we better make it really broad so we could do whatever we thought was most important. And so our mission statement, according to the IRS, is to alleviate poverty, promote democracy, and celebrate diversity. And basically, you can do pretty much anything under that umbrella.
And Aisha, I was wondering, I saw on your website that some of your travel recently was in partnership with the State Department or was sponsored in some ways by the U.S. State Department. And I wondered, you know, is that a conflict for you to be representing the U.S. government abroad?
Well, that was one of the cool parts about the tour. I've done one trip to Kazakhstan with the State Department. And that was one thing that I actually appreciated about the tour was that I didn't have to represent the State Department. I mean, they helped organize the events. That was their thing, but I spoke really vocally with a lot of critique about our government and about the inequalities in this country, and was just pretty blatant. I even, you know, sang in support of Palestine and occupied peoples around the world. And I think that was something that was, number one, really embraced not only by the audiences, but also moving people in the embassy to cry and just kind of putting up a mirror. And that was something that was also, I don't know if that they expected it. Maybe. I don't know what they were expecting, to be honest. But I could just be real with it. And I didn't feel like I had to compromise my message or who I was, because that's not really part of what I do with Raptivism. But one thing that I did like about that contrast, it was kind of an interesting, it was like this first time. Why not? Let's give this a try. Let's see what this is like. And I find myself in a lot of spaces where I'm challenging people to think differently, and I don't find that I'm preaching to the choir. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so that was one of those spaces too, which was really cool. I mean, I really appreciated the opportunity to get past certain doors and be able to speak really vocally and have the chance to share what I believe are my truths, or amplify voices from my colleagues that I've worked with through the music, through the album, through collective educational workshops. So that was powerful, I think. The State Department did do some organizing, but really a lot of the communities and the hip-hop communities were the ones that they called upon to put together the concerts. And they're the ones who got people out and interested in being involved. And meeting the hip-hop artists that lead those respective scenes, from Pavlodar to Shymkent to Almaty to Astana, they had so much talent and were bringing so much fierceness to the mic or with their bodies and the way they're expressing themselves through dance. And they weren't getting the recognition that they deserved. And especially a lot of them are these storytellers who are telling stories that were, quote unquote, not allowed. In a lot of ways, there's a lot of pushback. They're not supposed to talk about these things. And I found that with that trip, it was amazing, because I also was able to, just by virtue of some of that imperialist mentality that people have, just be like, they need to get their shine. Like, I'm on the stage too, but whoa, let's listen up. And from that, they had funding opportunities to continue their art. And there were new venues that opened up through just that exposure, as well as us working collaboratively, so that people could appreciate the art more.
So you're going to be performing on Tuesday night at a fundraiser for Global Exchange. That's at El Rio. How did you decide to do a fundraiser for Global Exchange?
Well, I was invited. Global Exchange contacted me, and I was very excited. I had heard already about their work and had some familiarity. And the more I kept reading up and checking out the different projects that Global Exchange has done over the years, from Cuba to Philistine to many places in between, and hearing that emphasis on people power and seeing kind of a commonality, to me, what seemed like humanizing humanizing, whether that be a quote-unquote issue, or humanizing a movement that's going on and seeing the ways that we can be in solidarity, that's something that really resonates with me and resonates with my work and my belief in raptivism, rap activism around the world.
We had a couple of staff people who went and heard her perform, and they were blown away that somebody could embrace the issues, the international issues and the global connections that are so important for global exchange, but could do it with a local focus, so could bring these global and local things together culturally with music that's modern and new and also incredibly beautiful. I've just heard little clips. I'm really, really excited about hearing her sing and being together, all of us, in a venue that's a place we used to hang out a lot at, and it's really fun, and we're going to have grilled cheese sandwiches.
Dyke-owned.
Yes.
And, yeah, just really, and I mean, El Rio is definitely a venue that has given back a lot to our community and really
for
been
sure.
very accessible. And I've been talking to Aisha Fukushima and Kirsten Moeller. Aisha Fukushima is an amazing hip-hop raptivist and local speaker performer and educator. And Kirsten Moeller is the co-founder of Global Exchange. And let's listen to a little music.
Arigato. Merci.
Damn. Who knows where you come from, where you're going to, 6 degrees of separation between me and you. You got me twisted on a string, and I think you know exactly what I mean. I find it hard to believe I didn't know this strength inside of me. I find it hard to believe that friends and foes become enemies.
Je ne lâcherai pas le mic, non, je ne baisserai pas les bras, je ne gâcherai pas ma life. Tu voulais nous tester, fallait pas.
No, 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 no. I won't give up. No, 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 no. I won't give up. No, 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 no.
On m'a dit laisse tomber, laisse tomber. Mais malgré tout on lâche pas. On sait ce qu'on fait, on sait ce qu'on est. On s'est dit laisse couler, fait tourner. Rien à perdre, rien à prouver. Seul on a tout fait. On m'a dit laisse tomber, laisse tomber. Mais malgré tout on lâche pas. On sait ce qu'on fait, on sait ce qu'on est. On s'est dit laisse couler, fait tourner. Rien à perdre, rien à prouver. Seul on a tout fait.